gets colder. My eyes go thin as I get older. Piece in pieces, bloody and bruised. I feel so helpless and confused. Cause I hear screaming on the left, yelling on the right. I'm sitting in the middle trying to live my life.
Good afternoon. This is Evelyn Pringle. Welcome to Focus on the Facts. My guest today is Kevin Galilei, a Canadian human rights activist, author, and historian. Today is the third time that Kevin agreed to be interviewed on the show. He is the most knowledgeable expert in the world on the UN's global depopulation agenda and the covert agents that have been used for genocide since 1945. The nearly seven decades of covert chemical and biological agents used on the general public to engineer a global depopulation decline has succeeded in preventing the birth of 2 billion children and causing the premature death of at least 500 million people, Kevin says. Kevin was recently on a hunger strike in Rome trying to convince the Pope to refrain from the moral and material support for the depopulation genocide on people around the world by the UN and executive branches of government. I posted many of Kevin's videos and interviews on other radio shows on my Facebook page for people interested in learning more about the depopulation agenda. He is also the author of several books, including Peace Without Poison and The Future of Global Governance, which can be purchased online. Listeners can also read his downloadable book, Killing Us Softly, Causes and Consequences of the Global Depopulation Policy. Today we'll discuss the genocide being conducted through biological methods, which include GMOs, vaccines, and the man-made pandemics and epidemics, and we'll also discuss the chemical methods being used to depopulate the planet, which include fluoride, endocrine disruptors, and the chemtrails we see sprayed across our skies. The biggest problem with stopping this depopulation agenda is the resistance by the public to believe that this evil program even exists, and to get them to accept the reality of what is being done to all of us. So I'll bring Kevin on now to explain the three phases of global depopulation policy that have occurred since 1945 and to tell us how the UN set up the central measures and the reasoning behind these depopulation measures. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you for having me back, Evelyn. It's always a pleasure. This is our third show, and I'm talking to your listeners from Bucharest, Romania, where I arrived only yesterday after a well-deserved one-week break by the Black Sea because
yes,
I needed to recover.
I was looking for you. I was looking for you. I knew that you had ended in Rome, and I couldn't find you, and I was getting kind of worried.
I didn't have access to any internet while on the Black Sea coast, and that's why I couldn't contact anybody. And when I returned to the capital of Romania yesterday, and I had access to internet once again, I've been trying ever since to catch up with my emails and some 1,000 emails that I have to answer to. Yes, the three phases of depopulation. Let's start with that because it is a good introduction.
Right.
As you've mentioned, the program has started. The population control program started in 1945 as a peace preservation measure, really to prevent the possibility of a third world war that this time would be nuclear and therefore catastrophic. So since war could no longer be used to solve the country's political, environmental, economic, and material problems, then obviously an alternative had to be found, and the only logical alternative was that every country should control its population and that way stay within its natural resources, within its limits, and does not need to cause or to start wars of aggression. But in order to do this, and this is the crux of the problem, you know, how do you control population growth? You're going against the most natural instinct, and that is the instinct to procreate, and that is easier said than done. And it was agreed that the only way to do it is by interfering with the people's reproductive system. In other words, impairing fertility. and they began doing so, impairing fertility through covert methods in 1945, because it could not be done openly like China did starting in 1978. So the first goal was to reduce the total fertility rate, which is the number of children born to every woman, so the average number of children born to every woman in any given country. And the logical number to stabilize the population is obviously what's called replacement level fertility. In other words, two children for every couple or for every woman. So if every woman gives birth to just two children, the population neither grows nor decreases. So that was the first objective of the global depopulation policy, and that has been more or less achieved by the year 2000, with the exception of some 30 African countries, which are now at the receiving end of these fertility impairment methods. The second objective of the global depopulation policy is to make sure that the total global population does not exceed 9 or 10 billion by the middle of this century. In other words, by 2050. Why? Because that is the maximum number that we can feed and house and educate and transport and so on, given the existing land mass and our yield per hectare of agricultural land. So every country on Earth is obviously subjected to population control methods because the population grows everywhere and has to be stabilized everywhere. There are no exceptions, and not even the most powerful countries can escape or eschew their responsibilities towards this international framework for peace. And the third and last goal of the global depopulation policy is to ensure that the global population decreases to what is considered to be a sustainable level by as soon as possible. In some countries it has already started, this drive towards optimal population levels. But globally, this program, or this last phase of the global depopulation program, will not begin until 2050, when the population will have stabilized, the global population will have stabilized at 9 or 10 billion people. And the objective is to bring down the population to about 4.5 billion people, which is the number that, according to calculations, the Earth can sustain sustainably. In other words, without doing damage to the planet and to its life support systems, damage that will obviously be costing dearly future generations and endanger their survival, and therefore the survival of mankind. So these, in a nutshell, are the three grand objectives of the global depopulation policy. As you have mentioned, Evelyn, I've just finished a 60-day hunger strike in Rome, and that was directed, obviously, at the papacy, and at their doctrine, if you want, or position on birth control, and the loophole they have created for secular authorities to commit genocide in the most sort of civilized manner possible. And we have yet to see a movement, at least open movement, on church doctrine, but I'm sure that will come. As we all know, the church acts in its own time and long term, and they always take a long time to respond to any kind of impetus from any forces in society. But I have no doubt that a decision has already been taken, and that they have already bent to this new reality. And the first evidence of that is that the G20 that met recently in Japan have not announced the creation of a new World Health Organization, which was, if you want, the threat that they issued, and that was directly intended for the church. They issued this threat about 4 months ago, 3 or 4 months ago, just was when I announced my upcoming hunger strike in Rome. And they issued this threat to send the Vatican the message that unless they change their church doctrine and allow governments to use contraceptives, the organization that is now in charge of involuntarily sterilizing the masses throughout the world, which is the World Health Organization, now located in Geneva, Switzerland, will be basically disempowered and moved, or a new organization will be created in Asia, in Japan, and the program will be redirected then outside of the sphere of influence of the church. But because this announcement, this organization was not created, its announcement was not made, that indicates that already the church has agreed to allow governments to use contraceptives. The official announcement is yet to be made, but behind the scenes, that is certainly what has happened. And it was very interesting because when I was in Rome towards the tail end of my hunger strike, a huge caravan of cars with Japanese officials arrived at the Vatican, and I had the good fortune, if you want, to be on the street at that time and to see them approaching the Vatican. And it was under the high security with the helicopters flying above the Vatican the entire time. It was quite a show to see. And I'm certain that at that time they discussed this very issue. And
that's really interesting.
Yes, it certainly is. But this is the kind of subtle things we have to be looking for, because this program has always operated behind the cover of secrecy, behind layers and layers of deception and misinformation, for the obvious reason that it is not only illegal but immoral. And for executive governments and for our secular and religious authorities to maintain credibility and legality, they obviously cannot even whisper admit, you know, even the slightest culpability in this, which is why we have yet to see any official declarations, and which is why they never respond to anything, either positive or negative, either acknowledging or not acknowledging, because there is no defense against this position, and because I have provided clear scientific evidence that indeed this is how they have proceeded. And they cannot defend themselves against the accusation and against the evidence, which the evidence is speaks volumes. It is clear, and it is impossible to deny it. So they just hide behind silence now. That's the last resort, if you want, taking the Fifth Amendment, I guess, the Americans would call that, and refusing to say anything. But behind the scenes, you know, the entire system is moving at huge speed. And now that the British have separated from the European Union, which is one of the grand projects of the globalists, obviously they're under tremendous pressure to change course and to change their methods because they no longer work. The system is disintegrating before their very eyes, and the fact that the British people have voted to separate from, you know, the grand European project is a clear indication that they can no longer hold their system together. It is falling at the seams.
I was going to ask you about that, if you had thoughts on that, and that's what I was thinking too, that this has to play into, you know, that
yes.
They're waking up, they want out of that system, and for good reason.
This is a clear indication that, completely disregarding the public's will, because they have created these structures that are not only outside democratic checks and balances, but literally anti-democratic in order to achieve, you know, these globalizing goals. It's no longer working. They have pushed beyond the limits of what people can accept or tolerate. And despite, you know, the grand forces and players aligned behind the globalist agenda, they can no longer override the will of the people. They can no longer hide their, you know, their secrets, and one of the greatest secrets, obviously, controlling population growth through these, completely illegal and immoral methods that I have brought to the fore and have exposed and explained and detailed for the world to see. They have to act. There's just no other way. And that is my next step. You know, I'm since they are now people in the system, which is made of bureaucrats and technocrats primarily. You know, not really of political figures of note. This is a technocratic system that commits structural violence and that has no single driver. It is, you know, by mutual coercion, mutually agreed upon. It's a big machine, a big beast that has been set in motion in 1945 and has grown by leaps and bounds. It is now in its third or fourth generation of political leadership and is completely out of control. It can only be stopped by us, the people from the outside, and this is exactly what we're doing. So my next move is now to confront the system directly at its core at the World Health Organization in Geneva, Switzerland, and I'm going there as soon as I have enough money donated by people from around the world who support my efforts. I will go there, and I will walk into the World Health Organization, and I will immediately ask everybody to leave the building. I will declare the building shut down by the People's Protection Force, which is the organization that I have created, you know, for this for the purpose of protecting people from governments and when it comes to direct confrontation. And this is the most civilized form of confrontation that I will engage in order to give the system a chance to engage the very legal system that now have been disengaged because the program of population control is outside the law. It is extrajudicial. And by doing what I will be doing in Geneva, I will give the system the ability or the opportunity to re-engage the legal system and deal with this situation dead on. So that there can be a reestablishment of the rule of law, of democratic checks and balances, and of course of decency and sanity to this system, which has completely gotten out of hand. So by doing this, by walking into that building, which is going to be obviously very confrontational and you know, not an easy thing to do, embarrassing. I'm not the kind of person that likes confrontation. But this is a civilized form of confrontation. I obviously will not be walking in there with a machete or a gun to threaten people, but simply with my arguments and my voice. And I have already given, you know, full notice to the Swiss authorities, and I have asked them to act in advance of my coming. I've asked them to take the initiative and arrest Dr. Margaret Chan, who is the current Director General of the World Health Organization, either hand her over to an international criminal court to face charges of crimes against humanity and genocide, or simply ship her back to China where she comes from, because she is a Chinese citizen, apparently born and raised in Hong Kong. And also to shut down the WHO, the World Health Organization. There has been absolutely no response, not even an acknowledgement of receipt of the letters, once again because there's no possible response they can give that is satisfactory. And any kind of response would be an acknowledgement of the validity of what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is legally sound, and you know, I'll be very easy for me to defend my position in court, in Swiss courts or any courts for that matter. Because legislation within the criminal code of every country, of international law, and also of Good Samaritan laws, which are, you know, the traditional moral laws that have been passed down through generations, they're very clear. And, for instance, the Good Samaritan laws state that a person is required to come to the aid of another who is exposed to great physical harm. And this is clearly a case where I, who am that person who is required to come to the aid of my fellow human beings on this planet, who are being physically harmed by the covert methods of the population under the abuse and misuse of medicine by the World Health Organization and public and under the misuse of public health as well. I have a duty to act. I have a general duty to assist. And this this is established in the criminal code of just about any country on earth since 1945. It has a long history starting in Egypt, ancient Egypt, and India, you know, long before the modern era. But then it grew in the 19th century when similar provisions appeared in the Russian Criminal Code in 1845, in the Criminal Codes of Tuscany in 1853, of the Netherlands in 1881, in Italy in 1889, and so on. But after since the World War II, almost every new criminal code contains a so-called failure to rescue provision. And that will be my... the checkmate that I will put the existing system in once I walk into the WHO building and demand that everybody leave the building, that the building is from this moment on closed because it engages in crimes against humanity. And then I will walk up to the offices of Dr. Margaret Chan. Hopefully she will be in the building. But I doubt that that will be the case because they will know exactly when I'm coming, and they will make sure that she's nowhere near there, and she'll probably make sure that she's out of the country. That will place the Swiss authority in a bind. They can only do one of two things, which is either they allow me to shut down the WHO building, which is very unlikely, or they will arrest me and prosecute me for whatever charges they will bring against me. They will imprison me, and they will bring me before a judge, and then a legal process will begin. And I'm hoping that they will choose this this option so that the system can save face, that we can stop the genocide, you know, through peaceful means, and we don't need to resort to any acts of violence, which will be the next step if they do not take this last chance for a peaceful resolution, which I'm offering them. Obviously, it's going to be a time of great stress for me because I will be imprisoned again. This will be my eighth imprisonment. I don't like prison, just like I'm certain that there's nobody out there who likes prison. But I am willing to make this sacrifice for a peaceful transition from covert to overt methods of population control. The time has come. And obviously, if China can do it and has been doing since 1978, we can do it too. The world can do it. China provides an example of how to proceed legally, how to control population growth through legal means and not through covert chemical and biological means, which is what the West has done and the rest of the world has done through the direction of the United Nations and its agencies, because the West could not do it like China did legally. The West was forced by structural obstacles that were in place in 1945 to proceed through secret means, and I've explained what those structural obstacles were in several of my books.
Great.
So that is the plan now that I'm preparing for in Geneva. It's very bold, and it's going to be obviously difficult.
Yes, yes. Well, I hope that we can stay in contact because I'll be real anxious to see how this goes for you. That this is—it's exciting, but it's definitely dangerous for you, no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I will make sure that I will, you know, keep everybody extremely well informed. Depending on how, what kind of financial support I get from people from around the world, I will be able to take another person with me who can film the whole episode. So, you know, just like Rupert Quaintance filmed all my activities in Rome, and we were extremely prolific, as you well know. And we kept everybody up to date in the greatest detail on a daily basis. And we didn't, I didn't miss a single day. And I intend to be just as thorough when during this action in Geneva. Obviously, once they arrest me, it will depend on the people outside to carry out my messages and on establishing a communication line from jail where I will be held to the outside world. Which is why I'm going to use this very interview to call for legal assistance. Any organization, legal organization out there that is willing to offer its support, and now is the time to do it, especially an organization that has branches in Switzerland, because this will obviously be dealt with in Swiss courts. So please contact me and let me know if you're willing to do your part. It is well known that I don't have much faith in the legal community, and they have failed us miserably, and they have shown, you know, to be completely useless. The legal branches of every government have long succumbed to this system of genocide that has been instituted since 1945, and have provided, you know, their full support and efforts to the commission of genocide and to hiding the crimes against humanity through structural violence. So this is also an opportunity for the legal community to completely turn around and reestablish credibility for their profession, which is completely discredited and it's in shambles. And it really is. It would be for me, if I were a lawyer, would be ashamed to call myself a lawyer in this day and age, just as it would be ashamed to call myself a judge or a prosecutor. So we shall see what happens. My guess is that I'll have to fight this alone, just as I did in Canada during my six imprisonments there. All lawyers that were appointed by the state, or even lawyers that I hired, you know, proved to be to all work for the government and against my not only my basic interests, but my certainly against my best interests. We shall see if now the legal community takes this opportunity that I'm providing them with.
Do you think that people are afraid to come forward? I mean, when I was saying before that I was concerned about you, well, you know, it's because everybody's getting murdered off, that people that go up against these elite, you know, I mean, whether that people with vaccines, those scientists, holistic doctors, stuff are being murdered off. I mean, reporters are being murdered off, and anybody that goes up against these people, you know, the next thing you know, they end up dead.
Many of these reports of deaths, you know, of doctors and journalists are exaggerated or completely false. The reality
is...
The ones
I'm talking about aren't false. I mean, I know the reporters that were murdered, and I know some of the doctors that were murdered. These aren't false.
Yes, but, you know, they've died, but there's, you know, no evidence that I have seen that would show they were, you know, murdered in cold blood. But leaving that aside, you know, the reality is actually the reverse. It's the people within the system who are completely terrified and no longer sleep at night, because they know that the day of reckoning has come and that this transition now can be extremely brutal. And, you know, if the masses get out of control and if the anger is not tampered by action, then obviously, you know, people are going to ask for, you know, going to want retribution, and somebody will have to take responsibility for the crimes committed, which are without precedent, like I said. And you've mentioned, you know, the birth of 2.5 billion children has been prevented. The death of at least half a billion people has been caused the premature death, and 60% of the population of developed nations suffers from chronic illness as a direct result of this covert program of, you know, slow poisoning over over decades, and on and on. Not to mention, you know, the damage that has been done to the rule of law, to democratic checks and balances, to the social contract, to the integrity of our religious and the secular leaders, and so on. The damage, you know, is extensive, and it is completely without precedent. And obviously, crimes of this magnitude cannot remain unaddressed. You know, someone will have to go to prison, especially if they don't back off and they don't come forward and they don't explain to the public, as I have done, you know, why this has been necessary, why this has gone on longer than it should have gone on, and so on.
Yeah.
All of these things will have to come before.
Some of those ways that they've used to depopulate the planet, you know, to commit genocide on us. Let's start with the fluoride, you know, and that bothers me because, you know, we say that us people need to stop these things. Well, why in the world, in the U.S., cannot we demand that they quit putting fluoride in our water?
You see, until there is legislation that will control population growth, limited to children only, governments are at a loss as to how to proceed. They can't stop the existing chemical methods because if they stop them, birth rates will go up immediately. So all their efforts will have been to no avail. And they are trying now to replace covert chemical methods of population control with covert biological methods, which, in other words, with mandatory vaccines that have
right.
That have been designed to cause genetic alterations that would lead to infertility and morbidity, which are the two ways by which population is controlled at both ends of life, birth and death. And, you know, their attempt to replace chemical methods, which are now on the way out, with biological methods is not going very well. You know, before they could even implement these mandatory immunization programs, which are just, you know, mass involuntary sterilization programs, and others have already exposed them. And, you know, we're no longer marginalized with the accusation of conspiracy theory because my articles alone are published by reputable peer-reviewed medical journals, so they're no longer questioned. The science is there; it's clear. I provided plenty of evidence of you know how they're attempting to turn nature against man through these mandatory immunization programs and through the misuse of vaccines. And genetic breakthroughs to cause genetic alterations that would lead to infertility and morbidity. So these, you know, they don't know. Now they're like deer caught in the headlights. They don't know how to change from covert to overt methods. The entire system is geared towards operating in the shadows. And, you know, using medicine and public health as handmaidens for genocide without the public's knowledge or consent, you know, covered by the ignorance under which they have kept us for 70 years. That ignorance has fallen now. All of their walls of deception and lies and manipulation have also been shattered. And now we lack any kind of political leadership because this system is decentralized, if you want. I mean, the United Nations and its agencies are the bean counters of this program. You know, they oversee how each government attains, you know, its objectives and provides them with support. But they don't have the right to really enforce it, and they can account impose it on everybody. It is by mutual coercion, mutually agreed upon. So it does not have a single decision maker. They're all in this together. They're complicit in crimes against humanity now for 70 years, you know, various countries for a certain number of time, depending on when they joined the program. And it is this complicity in crimes against humanity that keeps them now, you know, tied at the hip like Siamese twins, and that, but that also prevents anybody from taking action and, you know, turning the system around, because this system is decentralized. And since the people within the system are all prisoners of this system can only be shattered and changed from the outside, which is something I understood early on. And I have acted on this knowledge, and this is why I've been so successful, if you want. And now I have allies within, you know, there is not a country on earth, not a government on earth that does not support my efforts now and admires what I do, and certainly not an intelligence service or a secret service that does not want me to succeed. And indeed, there is plenty of evidence to show that I am receiving a lot of assistance from a lot of secret services around the world. And this shows, you know, that we are almost there. And what this system needs now is a last jolt to re-engage, you know, the rule of law, so that it can be solved within the existing legal frameworks. And that's what my action in Geneva will trigger.
You
asked about the methods.
I said, we talked about this before. All the methods that you're using is the worst in the United States. I mean, we can't do anything. I must watch 5 videos this morning on these endocrine disruptors, and they're talking about all these chemicals that are in all our plastics and in all of our carpet, in bottles and everything in our house, and other countries have banned a lot of these chemicals, you know, but not here. We have it everywhere, and they don't, I mean, a few states have banned this in baby bottles and things like this, but we can't get on a roll to get rid of these chemicals that are all over our homes.
Don't be deceived by news that, you know, other countries have eliminated this or that endocrine disruptor or depopulation poison, as I like to call them, because the reality is that every country uses them. It may not use all of them, may use some of them, and different countries use different endocrine disruptors, therefore different depopulation methods, but they all use them, because that's how covert chemical attacks on fertility has been accomplished. And continues to be accomplished. So when you talk about fluoridation, let's take fluoridation specifically. You know, many of the arguments in the U.S. Are that, well, look at Europe. You know, they stopped water fluoridation in the 1970s. Well, yes, they stopped water fluoridation only to replace it with salt fluoridation or the fluoridation of milk or fluoridation of many other food products, which now contain fluoride as an added element or mineral. Because the World Health Organization decreed that fluoride is an essential mineral, and therefore it can be added to anything without even labeling, without even indicating that this has been added to it. So, you know, Europe hasn't changed anything. All they've done is stop water fluoridation only to replace it with salt fluoridation or milk fluoridation or bloody ice cream fluoridation. So fluoride is everywhere in every country, in every toothpaste and dental product. And it is done in one of the following ways, either through water fluoridation, which costs the government because government has to pay for that, and you need a water infrastructure in order to fluoridate. So that means water fluoridation is only possible in developed countries where there is a water infrastructure and you can treat the water with fluoride. But you can do it through salt fluoridation, which is the method chosen by developed nations or second tier nations where governments are not rich enough to pay for water fluoridation, so they transfer the cost of poisoning the population into sterility and infertility to the consumers themselves by mandating the fluoridation of all salt products. So that when people go to the store and buy salt, they can only buy fluoridated salt, and every time they add it to their food, they sterilize themselves for the day. So that is the method chosen by the
Americans. Tell listeners what fluoride does to people.
I didn't hear that.
Oh, I said, tell the listeners what fluoride has been doing to people, what it does to people.
Fluoride is for one and one reason only, is to sterilize us, is to impair our reproductive systems. It has absolutely nothing to do with preventing tooth decay. That is just the pretext used, and it is a pretext that has been used by governments due to this to the permission to the ethical loophole given by the Church, by the Roman Catholic Church, for two governments to commit genocide, to sterilize the population through covert means and involuntary means. And that permission was given to secular governments in the encyclical letter Humanae Vitae, which means human life, on the regulation of birth, that is its subtitle, in paragraph 15, which states clearly that the Church considers it okay, considers it legal, if governments cause sterility while in the process of healing a disease. So you see, the Church reasoned, well, if we have to sterilize people anyway, well, let's do some good in the process, right? In other words, we balance the ill we do with the good we do. So we heal a disease, and in the process, we sterilize the people. That way, they can have some kind of, you know, ethical justification, some kind of moral excuse for committing genocide, for subverting fertility, for causing sterility. It was a huge compromise that the Church engaged in, and obviously, you know, a complete abandonment of everything and anything the Church stands for, but it was in recognition that, you know, unless population growth is stopped, then we're all dead. Nobody has a chance in hell, and humanity has no chance in hell of surviving into the future. So it is a realization, even by the Church leadership, that, you know, we have to do everything and anything to stop population growth. So fluoridation,
and they issued that
people,
in 1968,
get it,
right?
Is for sterilization only and for no other reason.
Right. Right. And the Church issued that in 1968, right?
Yes, but it goes back to a decision made in 1953 by a previous pope. I forget his name now. It was just not placed in an encyclical letter. It was a permission given in 1953, but it was not written down until 1968, and I suppose it was written down because secular authorities, you know, wanted the Church to commit itself to that position, and they wanted it in writing, which is what they did. And as soon as the Church did that in 1968, all of Latin America began implementing population control methods, covert population control by chemical means. They were waiting, you know, for the Church's permission, if you want. They couldn't, secular governments, you know, political authorities could not proceed without having permission from the highest moral authority in Christendom. We all know that Latin America is, you know, deeply Catholic, and, you know, to a great majority, 98% or so Catholic. So they needed that, and they got it. They got it from the Church. But, you know, the fluoridation, is, I mentioned water fluoridation for rich countries and with developed infrastructure. There is soil fluoridation for, you know, poorer countries who want to transfer the cost of sterilization to the people themselves and who lack this water treatment plants and therefore cannot poison the water with fluoride through treating it. Then there is, you know, the method of fluoridating certain milk products. Or all milk products, which is something that the Bulgarians did, the Thai people, Thailand does it through milk fluoridation, parts of Russia do it, and several other countries, some of them in South America.
Doesn't fluoride damage the brain, too? Doesn't fluoride damage the brain, too? Doesn't it dumb us down?
Yes, the fluoride is a dangerous chemical, obviously an endocrine disruptor and a lot worse, and it damages not only the reproductive system, but the entire endocrine system, including the brain. And in the brain, of course, it does tremendous damage, which is why we see developmental disorders in children, such as autism and attention deficit syndrome. And we see neurological degeneration in the older people because of, you know, fluoridation primarily. And diseases such as Alzheimer's and early onset dementia and so on, these are all, if not entirely caused, then certainly exacerbated by the fluoridation program. But fluoride is no longer the one and only depopulation toxin added to our food system or water system. In the meantime, there are dozens and as many as 160 endocrine disruptors that have been identified as a result of my action in 2014, might I add, when I took on chemical methods population control in 2014 with a hunger strike also in Rome at the Vatican. And the response to that was that governments, you know, initiated a reform program of the chemical environment, and they've ordered state agencies to identify these endocrine disruptors. This is what the euphemism they use for these depopulation poisons. So let's call them depopulation poisons.
Right.
They have identified 165 of them. They placed them on a list. ECHA, I'm talking about, the European Chemicals Agency, is at the forefront of this effort. They placed them on a list of substances of great concern. They have you know, drafted rules for identifying what constitutes an endocrine disruptor, and that was a, you know, big headache for scientists and also a political battle, because industry obviously did not want to eliminate all these endocrine disruptors after having been forced to put them in their industrial processes, and any kind of change of this nature of industrial processes is going to be extremely expensive, right? So they're probably saying to governments, well, are you going to pay for this? Because, you know, you people ordered us to poison the population through endocrine disruptors, and we've added all these poisons, and now the entire industrial processes for instance, the production of plastics depends on these endocrine disruptors, on these depopulation poisons, and now we have to eliminate them, so we have to go back to bottling in glass. So we have to change all our bottling plants and assembly lines, you know, from plastic to glass, right? Who's going to pay for that? And, you know, how long is that going to take? You can imagine. So which is why this process is so long drawn, and it takes such a long time. And now, by the end of 2016, you know, the deadlines will start for eliminating this these depopulation poisons will start to kick in. And this is obviously going to be extremely costly and require, you know, a complete restructuring of many, many industrial processes and the entire manner and mode in which, for instance, food is packaged and beverages are packaged, which is just one of the areas affected by this depopulation program, because it affects, you know, virtually every consumer product, certainly almost every cosmetic product. And many of the construction products, and many of the the computers and of the toys and of the consumer items that we use in the household on a daily basis. It is a complete.
I was watching those videos, and I was just amazed at how these endocrine disruptors are in everything. I mean,
yes,
I was just,
they are in everything, and they are by design. They did it by design, because the human body is extremely resilient, you see, they want now to make sure that now the depopulation program is in that second phase I mentioned, which is they want to ensure that the global population peaks at 9 or at most 10 billion. So now we're being bombarded from every direction by multiple methods of chemical and biological methods of population control that are, you know, global. No country is spared, so that the population peaks at 9 or 10 billion. But let me finish with the fluoride. So we have water, we have salt, we have milk fluoridation. We also have direct application of fluoride in the mouth, which is through dental services, which is what the wealthy northern countries, like Scandinavian countries and Germany and so on, that have free and compulsory dental programs, that's why they're free, and that is why also why they're compulsory. So every time
people
go to the dentist,
free, then you better look out, eh?
Everything the government gives is free, like the vaccines,
yeah.
You know, you That is the clearest indication that is a depopulation poison. That is the only time when the government gives us anything free, is when they intend to subvert either our fertility or our longevity. So that is, you know, the best way of identifying for people who have no scientific background and no notion of what to look for. This is the best way of identifying. Anything the government gives you, anything free, run in the opposite direction as fast as you can. Yeah. That is the safest way to protect you and to protect your children.
There's going to be a revolution in this country over the vaccines, because they're getting ready. California starts, I think, July 1st, where they're going to force all the kids to be vaccinated with our mandated schedule, which is the biggest in the world. And we have the worst health outcomes in the world, the worst birth survival rate and everything else, but we have the most expensive health care system. But now they're going to start forcing these people, and I heard that there was like 220,000 right now in California kids that would not be allowed in school. Their parents are not going to let them put these poisons in their kids.
This program, this forcing people, cannot go anywhere. I'm telling you what this is going to lead. This is going to lead to a next incident like it happened in the UK, where that MP Joe Cox was murdered on the street by a gunman. This is the exact same thing that's going to stop it in the United States, because these cowardly politicians that we have elected, these spineless assholes, there's no other way of calling them, they, instead of doing their jobs and legislating limits to fertility like China has done, instead of doing what they're being paid for, they continue to proceed in this diabolical and perverse manner of manipulating science and medicine to serve as the handmaidens of genocide. So this is what's going to happen. You know, some pissed off parent is going to shoot one of these assholes in the head and is going to send a clear message that, no, you're not going to poison us and our children into sterility and morbidity and chronic illness for the rest of our children's lives and bring our genetic lineages to a dead end, to annihilation, just so that you can accomplish, demographic and economic objectives at the cost of our lives, which is an infringement of the most basic, most fundamental rights. And these rights are non-negotiable. We don't negotiate our children's lives, period. And we're legally entitled to use any and all force to stop these assholes. Legally entitled. Not only are we legally entitled, we're legally forced by law, by legislation such as the Good Samaritan law, to intervene and to stop this genocide by any and all means, including the application of force. The law is clear. So we could, if one parent, one of these upset parents trying to protect their children, we'll have to resort to this kind of force, to this kind of last resort measure of shooting one of these politicians, which is what I'm trying to avoid now by trying to engage the legal system. This is going to set off not a revolution. This is going to be mayhem. This is what this is going to set off. There's going to be an all-out confrontation between the 99% and the 1%. In which the 99% will win and the 1% will be entirely annihilated. Not only will the 1% will be entirely annihilated, but their families will be entirely annihilated, because once this kind of retribution begins, nobody, and there's no organization, there's no country that is going to be able to intervene from the outside, because we're all part of this. The entire world is part of this. It's not like in the Second World War when, the Allies could come into Europe and stop the Axis powers. Now, everybody is involved in this. Everybody is guilty of committing genocide. So there is no outside force. There are no aliens coming to our rescue. There is no Marshall Plan. There is nothing. The legal systems are fully complicit in genocide. Our courts are guilty of genocide. So who's going to intervene? There's nobody to intervene. Right. This is why what I'm doing now in Geneva is a last, is grasping at straws to make sure that it does not come to this point where violence is going to be triggered and it's going to be unstoppable, because this violence, once it starts, it will not stop until all of the people involved in this genocide since 1945 pay for it with their lives. Period.
Yeah, right. Now, these endocrine disruptors, too, they really mess up the whole body, too, don't they?
There is nothing there is no physiological function in the human body that is not regulated by the endocrine system. So, right. In other words, the damage caused is universal. Universal, which is why the attack on fertility, you know, and this covert depopulation program, which goes by the euphemism of the demographic transition, has caused the so-called epidemiologic transition. In other words, as they have subverted fertility for the past, you know, 40, 50, 60 years, 70 years, depending on the country, they have triggered the increase of chronic or non-communicable illnesses, illnesses that did not exist before 1945, such as cancer.
Right.
You know, cardiovascular diseases that now are completely out of control. Obesity, which is, you know, 60% of the population is now obese in the developed world, and 30% of the children. Diabetes.
And they're disrupting
neurodevelopmental
their whole reproductive systems, aren't they? For men and women. I mean, they're disrupting their whole, they're mixing up their whole reproductive systems.
Yes, the damage is universal, and it is devastating. And it is, you know, the worst part is that it is transferred from one generation to the next. It is epigenetic. In other words, once you've damaged, you know, a human body to the point where you've caused chronic disease, these, you know, things like diabetes, for instance, and obesity, they get transferred to the next generation. So this is why now we have children who are born obese, or they become obese within the first 5 years of life. And, you know, you have early onset diabetes. You have children now, 10, 12, 13 years, 13-year-olds with diabetes, which is, you know, obviously it's completely unnatural, because the environment they have created for us through these endocrine disruptors, through this universal poisoning program, is completely unnatural.
Right. And then we throw in the chemtrails, the spraying, that they're killing us with the toxic spraying of our skies now.
And the chemtrails, you know, too.
Well, Kevin?
Yes.
I'm so glad that you could come on. I want you on again, because people have got to get this, because, right, they have got to stop this.
Yeah,
so
one time in Geneva, we'll definitely contact him.
Okay. Well, thank you, people, for tuning in. I hope you learned a little bit, and I hope that you come to believe and quit resisting this evil program exists and get the reality of what's being done to all of us. So tune in next week, and we'll get some more on this and give you some more focus on the back. Bye.
I can't save your sons and daughters. Well, I can't change the world and make things fair. The least that I can do, the least that I can do, the least that I can do is care. Faith is tried and true in tribulation. Love is lost and lonely. Check the news.